This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury, and welcome to Tech Talk here on BFM. We're going to be talking about something today that is nothing new to Tech Talk. We'll be talking a little bit about AI. And on the phone with me right now, I have Nikolai Doberstein. He is the managing partner, APAC head, communications, media, and technology. And just in a few days' time, he's going to be speaking all about AI here in Malaysia. It's at a forum happening on the 26th. And he's from Kearney. Welcome to the show, Nikolai.
Thank you, Richard, for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, where do we start with this subject? I mean, I've been talking about AI here on Tech Talk for a number of years, and specifically one of those things that always comes up is how it's going to take people's jobs, they're going to be worried about it, automation, AI go hand in hand. What's your take on that initially?
Yeah, I think there are obviously two schools of thought about how AI will impact sort of our work and life. I think it is clear that I think there's one school of thought which thinks that AI will take over everything and will displace most human activities and sometime soon. So it will be really catalytic impact. And then, of course, there's other school of thought which thinks about this more as a gradual impact of AI because it enhances and it augments human activities. And as most of the other technologies of digital have been doing so far. And there's a big debate raging on, actually, which is very interesting. And we will talk about this next week as well. But I think I personally believe it will be more gradual. I think AI will augment our lives, our work. And I think that allows us to manage the potential impact of AI over time.
Okay, so we're talking about this potential gradual impact over time. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, local AI talent and the capabilities that are here out in Malaysia, outside of Singapore, that could potentially create this gap in the development of solutions for, you know, specific socioeconomic issues across Southeast Asia for industries and for consumers.
No, Richard, I think talent is indeed a concern. I believe here in Malaysia, we need a much more systematic and long-term changes in the education system to address that. I think when I've been here for over 25 years, and I think Malaysia's talent base and the intrinsic capabilities are actually very good. But you also need to support this with a strong education system to hone this. And I think the challenge, of course, is that this is well understood, but it's hard to fix. And we have been discussing this particular technology, not just AI and digital, for the last 25 years. Now, and there are some good efforts going on. I think Malaysia is trying to move from STEM to STREAM, so adding to science, technology, and mathematics, also reading and arts. That's good. But if we look at it, I think in Kearney, we're having this global service location index, which measures sort of the attractiveness of Malaysia for outsourcing services. And Malaysia, for the last 15 years, has always been number three because of strong financial attractiveness, good business environment, good talent base. But if you now, and we have for the last couple of years, you have looked at this a bit more from the digital talent perspective and put digital skills in, and Malaysia could, if you put a higher weighting on it, drop from number three to number 19.
Wow.
That would, of course, have a dramatic impact on Malaysia's position as an attractive service and business location. And I would say, Richard, underscores the need to address the digital and AI talent development in Malaysia with actually quite urgency.
Right. Now, this report shows that, you know, AI has this potential to add, you know, $1 trillion to the region's GDP by 2030. And now we're talking about we're at number three, could potentially be at number 19. Why is it so difficult, Nikolai, for I don't know, Malaysian businesses or whatever to push that number up further? What's the kind of hold back, I guess?
I think I wouldn't say it's specific to Malaysia. I think where Malaysia is, I think we are still in sort of in nascent stages in Malaysia. I think, and that's probably true for Malaysia and the rest of the region. I think we have sort of 80-85% of companies in early stages. We have 25% just starting, and we have only 15% which are in more advanced stages in AI implementation. And this is probably more in sectors which are quite mature. No, I think the e-commerce, communications, media, financial services, transport, logistics, but also public safety and security. So, and it's also a question of investments, I think, which linked. I think you're probably 2 to 3 years behind some of the leaders. Mm-hmm. I think, as you saw in the report, Malaysia invests less than $1 per capita per year in AI currently, and that dwarfs to more than 150 in the US and 20 in China. Mm. Having said this, I think we're already seeing some good application developments. I think in our roundtable next week, we have Axiata Digital talking about how they've applied credit scoring engines for SMEs, and it's quite leading edge. We have Aerodyne, whose drone technology is using AI in a very advanced manner to capture and process data. And previously in our report, we also featured Pulsify, which allows companies, and they're working largely with multinationals, to screen candidate application, not just for experience, but also for innate traits, behaviors, motivations, and leadership qualities. So I think we're seeing it, but I think this is probably true for most countries that we're still in the early phases, but now it's a question, how can we accelerate it?
Yeah, and how do we get faster?
That's correct.
Now, there are five key challenges outlined and opportunities. Can you just go over these five challenges and the opportunities, please, Nicolai?
Of course. So what we found when we surveyed over 100 companies in the region, we spoke to over 25 users, providers, and regulators of AI. I think the five challenges, the first one is really that we see, and I would call it an overstated concern for talent gap. Of course, the moment you talk about AI, as we just started, Richard, you talk immediately about talent. And it's indeed not easy to find and attract the right technical talent. Mm-hmm. But you could also make the argument that this talent gap might be overstated, because it's probably less so today about the actual technical skills related to the development and implementation of AI. Because what you have is now ready to deploy, readily available AI models from the leading AI solution providers, the Amazons, Googles, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so if you equip your business talent with the right understanding of AI and sufficient technical skills, not deep technical skills, but understanding what it takes to apply AI, I think that challenge is probably not as big as I think we all make it out to be. Now, having said what we discussed earlier, we still need to develop talent for AI, and not just from a development perspective, but also understanding of the technology. Mm-hmm. The second issue is probably a big issue. It's really about the fragmentation of the ecosystem, because it's still a new sector.
Yeah.
And it's still a fragmented sector. So it's very difficult for companies to find the right providers. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to basically find the right providers, and we need to really make sure companies focus on the right, or not we make sure, but companies make sure they focus on the right use cases.
Right.
And that requires probably a more systematic development of the entire ecosystem, using test beds where you bring providers and users together, where they can experiment on use cases. So that's probably the second challenge. Mm-hmm. The third is more internally in the organization. Of course, if you for good AI, you need good data. Yeah. And for that, you need basically good data quality, good infrastructure, good governance. Mm. And that is, as you can imagine, not easy, particularly in a larger organization, to put this in place. Mm-hmm. That slows down sort of the adoption. And I think that the trick here, Richard, is for organizations to really understand how to balance the short-term requirements to drive the initial use cases and the longer-term requirements to put all AI and data building blocks in place. And I think it's sort of that balance and that two speed, which I think will make a difference.
Yeah.
The fourth challenge is probably more about the evolving regulations, because AI is also new to regulators. So particularly, I think financial regulators are very concerned about AI-based credit scoring engines, because it's a black box. And how do you explain a rejected applicant, that he was rejected because of on what basis, AI model. And that of course requires sort of working together with regulators, requires education of the regulators, so that I think they understand how it works, what the industry requirements, what the impact is on consumers, I think, and really sort of apply sort of a more balanced approach here. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is, I think, what we talked about earlier a bit, I think the user resistance to AI adoption. And I think it's clear whether you believe it will have a gradual impact or a catalytic impact, I think it will have an impact on, I think, displacing or replacing some workforce in time. And I think, so companies are getting concerned that there's a backlash by the employees. And I think you need to really make sure, I think, you have the right balance here, both at the company level in terms of winning over your employees, that it is helpful and will not just displace the workers. Of course, also on a national level, as we talked earlier, making sure we are developing the right skills for the long term. Mm-hmm.
Hold that thought, Nikolai. We need to take a short break. Folks, you're tuned into Tech Talk here on Enterprise on BFM 89.9. I'm on the phone with Nikolai Dobberstein. He is a managing partner for Malaysia over at Carney, the APAC head, the communications, media and technology. And he'll be doing a panel very shortly on the 26th of October talking about AI here in Malaysia. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Building Future Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm on the phone line with Nikolai Dobberstein. He is from Carney. Now, he is a managing partner over there, the APAC head of communications, media, and technology. Just before the break, Nikolai, we were talking, and we've spoken about it a few times here, about resistance to AI. And now, one of the things that kind of comes up regularly, and you briefly alluded to it a few moments ago, is about the idea of somebody being rejected for something because of a decision that AI makes, you know, whether or not that's bias or something. How do we look at that? And how do we address bias within AI? We talk about, you know, how it's good data and bad data. If there's bad data going in, the results are going to be bad data. How do we make sure that the data that's going in is correct and therefore we don't have biases?
I think you would probably at the beginning always have a little bit of a bias when you start a new model because your data sets might not be sort of fully localized. If you take a model which has been developed elsewhere and apply it here, I think you have to be conscious that there could be an inherent bias right from the start. So therefore, making sure you're really apply localized data and then train the model and then verify it and just not launch it based on previous models. So I think you have to really spend time developing and training the models because otherwise I think bias could always be there. And then you have to test, be conscious and test for bias.
Right. When we look at things like mortgages, for example, or banking loans, part of that decision in the past has been it's not just a black and white decision, whereas on paper, sometimes it could be a black and white decision. But then if you're sat opposite a bank manager and that bank manager then decides that perhaps even though you don't fill all the criteria, the human side of them might award that loan to you. Is there any future where AI kind of adopts a little bit of that strategy, do you think?
The answer is yes, yes, and no, probably, Richard. I think you can obviously build in psychometric data, which I think is how you react to a human into some of the AI models. You could also talk about Pulsify earlier,
right,
which tries to scan certain activities in a curriculum vitae for behaviors and leadership motivations. So I think you can build that in, but
right,
I think you also try by using AI put more objectivity in and less subjectivity. And I think generally, I think the ability of models to make more unbiased and fair decision is probably higher.
I see.
So I think you can build some elements in, but I think you probably don't want to also make a subjective call either.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, explain to me which industries, in your opinion, are likely to benefit most from AI adoption? I mean, we've spoken about banks and we've spoken about some of the e-commerce platforms. Off the top of your head, what do you think?
I would take a broader view. I think we see that AI has potential to deliver impact, I think, across the entire value chain and across industries. But I think it's most likely to have impact initially in two areas, marketing and sales, and supply chain management. And I think, in fact, I think that's what we're seeing right now in Malaysia and South Asia, the focus on revenue management, be it predictive upselling, be it cross-selling, be it customer lifecycle management, be it product recommendations. And that actually, it was interesting for us also, it contrasts to Europe, where 70% of AI deployments are focused on productivity and efficiency. Now, it might not be surprising if you think about South Asia, right, because I think AI is still nascent and we have fewer labor cost optimization opportunities. So therefore, focuses more on revenues. But I think it clearly sort of has an impact across industries. I think we probably will see that the priorities will shift, I think, and will shift within industries. I think agriculture, retail sectors will probably focus more on supply chain operations, procurement. We see energy and public sector probably pay more attention to backend optimization and information technology. Manufacturing is probably an area where there's a lot of potential, but still in a very nascent stage here. And I would say that's probably, Richard, more reflective of the high number of SMEs, which are 95% of the manufacturing companies in Malaysia. And they obviously will take time to adopt more advanced solutions.
Do you think people here in Malaysia are aware of the impact that AI has on their lives directly and indirectly, about how it can help them save money?
I mean, AI is already there in our lives. No, I think online e-commerce recommendations. I think music recommendations. The assistants we have, Google Home and Amazon. And also everyone is aware of the controversial aspects of AI. No, I think the targeted ads on social media and content, which I think we can't avoid. And we've seen the controversy, I think, with Facebook right now and previously Cambridge Analytica. No, and I think people are also worried about surveillance ability, which is clearly there, no? And the data, face recognition, and so on. But I think I think people are aware that AI is around. They might not call it AI, but I think it's there. And I think people are getting excited about the positive impact it can also have. I think because it can improve the efficiency of our workplaces. I think it can augment what we can do. It can take over repetitive tasks. As you know, it can free up, I think, the workforce from activities and do work which they're better equipped to do. I think, and if you do work which is more engaging, hopefully, I think it will increase happiness and job satisfaction. And of course, it can also be seen as during COVID as well. I think it can improve our healthcare because we do contact tracing. I think it helps in diagnostics. Yeah. It can improve treatment plans. So I think AI, and of course, I think transport will be, in my opinion, also a big important area, because I think AI helps with traffic management and commuting, and that will certainly improve sort of our lives comfort. So come back to your question. I think people are aware, and they probably not fully understood the entire potential of what AI can do. And I think, Richard, and that's probably sort of as we talked earlier, and some are concerned that it might displace their work.
Right. I suppose then my final question, I guess, before I ask you about the forum that you're hosting, the forum you're involved with, is whether or not there's too much of a focus on the negativity of AI rather than the positive aspects of it.
I think that's probably sort of always the case if you talk about new technology. You know, at the beginning, you get so we are really at the beginning of the S-curve of technology. I think people see the potential, get excited, but the moment you get excited and you haven't seen the full range of application, you also get very quickly worried about the potential negative implications. You know, which are understandable. I think we talked about the bias before. We talked about ethics, will it be applied? How will you protect my privacy? I think very, very important. So I think these are good concerns. And I think this dialogue will clearly help making sure we are focusing AI in the right direction, or any technology development in the right direction. So I think I'm not surprised. I've seen over the last 25 years in many new technologies coming up. And I think that's the right balance of seeing the potential, but seeing also the challenges.
Just before we wrap up then, Nikolai, tell me about this panel that you're hosting on the 26th.
So it's a joint executive roundtable together with MDEC. What we really wanted to do is elevate the discussion on AI and really think about what will it take to make a step change in an AI in Malaysia. So we created a different set of discussions, one about what the future of AI could be. I think what are some of the challenges we see in implementation. We talked about some of them today. And we created also two roundtables. One is really talking about more specifically what are the opportunities and challenges for AI in Malaysia. There's a number of panel members participating. And then we have a panel which talks about the lessons learned from other countries. Korea, we have Singapore, we have Estonia, and Saudi Arabia. So that's to provide different perspective and then think about what could this mean for Malaysia.
Wonderful. Nikolai, thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Thank you, Richard. Real pleasure.
My pleasure. I've been on the phone with Nikolai Dobberstein. He's the managing partner here in Malaysia for Carney. He's the APAC head, communications, media, and technology. For more information on that roundtable forum he was just talking about, head over to www.southeast-asia.kearney.com/event/AI in Malaysia. And we'll also post that in the details for the podcast. If you did miss any part of this podcast, you can download it from wherever you normally listen to your podcast from. We recommend the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Tech Talk, my name is Rich Bradbury here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.